Hello, and welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Christmas time is here, happiness and cheer, fun for all that children call their favorite time of year. Micah. Hi. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Micah. We're just getting ready for our Christmas podcast. Come on in. Today we're off in a winter wonderland. I'm going to chat with Wendy all about what's going on this holiday season for us. Enjoy. Hi, Wendy.
Morning.
How's it going?
Good.
We are in our traditional classic position of podcast over breakfast.
Except there's no breakfast.
We didn't have breakfast yet. We're having podcast.
Pre-breakfast podcast.
Oh, I was going to say instead of breakfast, but that would never
do. Oh, no. Oh, no.
So we'll see what we think about before we've eaten.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we nominally decided to talk about Christmas time, holiday time, Hanukkah time, solstice time, this midwinter celebratory time that pops up in lots of cultures.
I would probably venture to say all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, so we decided to say, what's that about?
Yeah. What is it about, Peter?
What is it about?
Well, I'm gonna toss the ball over to you.
Yeah, throw the ball to me. Well, in my class on Saturday, I talked about light. I talked about light as metaphor and light as an
light
actual
as light.
Thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, light as
phenomenon.
What is true, like light as opposed to darkness, that light is the thing that allows us to see, and in its absence, we are without seeing. So light is like a metaphor, but like there's that joke of, you know, if you're looking for your keys under the light, but you lost them somewhere else, right? It's like mm-hmm. the joke is somebody comes upon their friend looking for something under a light and says, what are you looking for? Oh, I'm looking for my keys. And when they don't find them, he says, well, where'd you lose your keys anyway? Oh, I lost them by the gate, but the light is better over here.
Mm-hmm. That's a funny joke.
We look in the wrong places, but the light has this pull. We feel like we can see there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the dark times, we're often looking for light in all kinds of places.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, this solstice, I don't know, I tend to think in, you know, my thinking about duality is always trying to, duality being, in this case, the light and the dark, is to see the light and the dark as one phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so when I think of this particular solstice, like this, the dark point of the year, it's the moment when the sun changes course, right? In its spiral, or I guess it's not a spiral, but it's in its pathway around.
Well, technically it's a turn of when the earth is tilting.
Exactly. But it looks like the earth is tilting, but it gets to the farthest or the two farthest points on its, I don't know
orbit.
What you call it, its orbit, or it's maybe it's ecliptic.
Mm-hmm.
You call it that?
Like an eclipse?
No. I just don't know.
Elliptical.
Elliptical, something like that. Anyway, it's an orbit.
Yeah.
And when it's on this side, there's that motion, that turning point where it comes back around, has a point where it appears from our perspective on Earth to not be moving, right? There's a pause. So you could sort of say it's like the galactic still point.
Yeah.
That's in the darkest, like that has the least light. And the other solstice is the still point that has the most light before it turns to darkness. So, you know, I always think of this one as the exhale.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, you know, and there's that place where it's just like, boom, everything goes kind of like really silent, dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I have associations with it. Like, you know, when you're in the...
Vaya Kumbhaka.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The pause at the end of the exhale.
Yeah. And, you know, there's an actuality to that.
Yeah.
And the actuality is that we see very little light and we feel it in our cultures. We feel it in our bodies. We feel it in our societies.
Yeah. Well, we just were doing a little celebration and instilling kind of new patterns in our own family, new tradition in our own family. And it was interesting because we decided to go with the presence idea,
mm-hmm.
and gifts. And I started by saying we're looking for light and we're looking for it in all kinds of places. And one of the places that in our culture, since we're so materialistic in our culture, we look to things as where we get our light from,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's such an interesting phenomenon. I was describing to you the other day, someone very close to me who said, I love giving presents.
Yeah.
I love thinking about what would make that person happy and getting that for
mm-hmm.
them. So there's this dual quality to the gifting thing.
Absolutely.
That part of it is about the joy of giving, the joy of receiving or gratitude. And then there's the material part of it too.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, I feel like, you know, for the last, I don't know how many years, maybe 20, I have been in a little bit of a struggle around that, where I feel that something happens to me after Thanksgiving where I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And it's very visceral, and it's been for a really long time. And when I used to work, it was even more. When I used to work in a full-time big job where mm-hmm. I had to travel a lot, like it would happen, and then there would be all these, it would be like food and parties and everything, and I couldn't abide it. And so my protest came out around gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just refuse to do that giving and receiving thing around Christmas time because it was so out of whack.
Yeah.
And it was always disappointing and just felt really wrong. And so, and I just didn't have the energy for it. So I would just shut it down. And then maybe, you know, like at the last minute, go out and begrudgingly get
right.
some family member something that like they would be offended if I didn't.
Right.
And it kind of wound down to a point where I was really pretty much out of that racket. But now I feel a little differently because it feels different. It's a lot more spacious in my life now. And so I think that there was something really special about our experience there because it was like this, you know, we kind of came together as a really small family unit and we all spontaneously had the same idea.
Yeah.
Of, you know, just sort of recognizing the giving and taking and the being together and
right. Not having to do with quantity.
No, it was just sort of like when Chris opened his one gift to show Mateo how.
Yeah.
It was the sweetest thing, you know.
Yeah.
He was sort of pantomiming, look, you know.
Yeah.
And it made me realize like children don't know that, you know, they really look at what their parents are doing as a model
yeah.
for how to behave around all of that. But for me, it was very, it felt very loving
yeah.
To each of us give a gift and to have a receiving of a gift.
Yeah.
And it was lovely.
Yeah.
And we had lights.
And we had lights, which gets back to lights and bells. I think bells is also important, which mm-hmm. I spoke about on Saturday also. We're ringing in the...
Mm-hmm. The season.
The new year, right? The
we're calling
change,
it in.
The change that you just described in the mm-hmm. elliptical mm-hmm. Orbit. And I think there's something to that ringing. You know, bells are... I've always felt like bells are mantra because they catch your attention. They have a certain frequency. So they hit you a certain way mm-hmm. and they carry off into a silence as the sound decays mm-hmm. to nothing.
But, you know, that's so interesting. I always have this feeling like we miss something. We're so fast in our pace nowadays that we miss the part where that we ring it, but then we go, okay, it's time for the next thing. And we don't like let it go to its final, you know what I mean? We don't like sit and be still until it really finally ends and then actually begins anew, which for me doesn't ever happen until, you know, right around Chinese New Year, right? Like sometime between the end, maybe the middle or end of January and the beginning, middle of February, and it changes. I just wake up and then I'm like, okay, roll up the sleeves. Let's go. What's new? And then it's a sense of like, I forgot what I planted on the other side of that darkness, but it doesn't matter because it's coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, all I have to do is see what's coming up, like the crocuses, you know?
Yeah.
And I literally every year, and that's my time of year, like I was born in March, early March, so I just always wake up at that time. But if I really let myself go down now, and I don't mean like I never leave the house, but, you know, really rest, then when it comes new, I wake up. But I see that people have a hard time with this.
Yeah.
I really see that.
Well, and I mean, I have culturally, it's a time of a lot of activity.
And
it's
we just
also
don't...
the Vata season,
yeah.
which makes for a lot of motion emotionally. Mm-hmm. As well as just you've driven to it.
And nobody ever tells you that it's okay to just be in stasis.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay not to be generating new things. It's okay to be gestating what you already have or to be processing something or like letting something go is actually work too. You know what I mean? It takes some, you know, presence of mind to like consciously let go of something as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel this time of year most embodies that for me, like the time when you just let it be, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And metaphorically and actually, you know, it's a time of year when this, you know, maybe not this year, but the snow is piled up on top of things. And, you know, I was actually looking at the ground when it thawed just these days. And I was thinking, oh, it's so funny. It feels like it wants to be covered up.
Mm.
You know, it's like, well, don't look there. It's mm-hmm. not ready. You know, it's just mulching. You know, it's
right.
And it'll be, you know, it felt spring-like, but it's not spring.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Seasons are weird.
Yeah. But I'm kind of jazzing on your metaphor of like looking for your keys under the light. When your keys are somewhere in your pocket in a closet, you know,
mm-hmm.
that it's really easy to just seek the light when, I don't know, when you're told that that's the good thing, right? We equate
right.
light and goodness. But, you know, if the thing you're looking for isn't in that spot, no amount of shedding light on it is going to put it there.
Yes.
And sometimes you need to like rummage around in the dark pockets.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And then by doing that, realize that it'll bring, you know, what, because for me, what is really the light is, you know, it's in you.
Like
the ability to see is in you. It's not an external thing.
Right. And I mean, that's such a perfect metaphor for a practice of yoga too. I mean, you close your eyes, you turn off looking outside into that light, into your own quote unquote darkness, but there's a different quality there.
Yeah.
You find the keys.
Yeah, you find the keys, whatever they are, whatever that represents.
Yeah. And then our place of processing all of that, or becoming aware in our minds of all of that, is when we come back out in life.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like when you have a meditation practice that you're comfortable in, there are those minutes when you're just sitting that you're just like, okay, I'm fine. Nothing has to happen now, like a bear in hibernation, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just enjoying being right now. But in order to have any kind of discussion about that, or, you know, chat about it, you come back out and then things are different. The keys make themselves evident because something came to you, or mm-hmm. because now some relationship that was challenging is working a little differently, right. Or you find a teacher, or something occurs.
Yeah. And isn't it funny that the real, I mean, it makes sense to me beyond where I think I could describe it in this moment, but the going, that journey inward, that looking for the keys in the dark pocket, all it really does involve some sort of discomfort. I want to say discomfort,
mm-hmm.
fumbling, but it doesn't feel good. And nobody says, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's supposed to be that way because we, you know, everything is, you know, sort of overlapping spirals. And what's in the pocket came from shit you did before.
Yeah.
And so it's uncomfortable to go there and look around in that. But, you know, the resources to be able to go there. Right. And then you find the key and then you come back. It's kind of like it's in my mind right now. It looks like the hero's journey a little bit. And then you come back.
But you have this stability through your practice to be able to do that.
Exactly. And you realize by doing it often that it's not just once.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think that's such an absolute concept that we have about things, that it's like, if I do it, it's once, and then I will be like this magnificent manifester, and right. I will never have to go in the dark again, and I will be forever in the light. And then we end up just sitting there staring at a blank light that seems external to us, but it's like silly. You don't have to turn on a light to look at something. You just look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you can constantly do that, going in and coming out and going coming out as you're describing.
That's so beautiful what you just said, because we have this experience in meditation often of jyoti, you know, seeing light. And our inclination when we have that is, oh, there's the light. Let's look at the light. Mm-hmm. Like that's the point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to hold that,
mm-hmm.
you lose it.
Yeah. Right?
And so the instruction is just allow that. And continue, right? Pass through, pass on. But people do that when they come back. They're like, oh, I figured it out. You know, mm-hmm. Rumi says I should do this. And so I'm trying to do that to everything.
Exactly.
And then it's like you're trying to hold your life in stasis when life is not static.
Exactly. I know. There's a misconstruing of the wisdom sometimes. You know, I always really do think of it as a matter of perspective. You know, when I was thinking about, you said holidays, I thought solstice, and then I was thinking about perspective because, you know, if you're in the winter solstice, but it really depends where you are, right? Like if you're on one end of the planet or the other end of the planet or on the equator or whatever, like what it looks like out there is going to change. And so, you know, if you think of yourself as the light, then you orient yourself towards your own inner light, and then you're just shining. But that's really hard for people. I feel like it's hard for people because we're so geared towards looking outside for the thing that we should be looking inside for, that that's a whole big turnaround. You know, it's almost like you're you think of yourself as outside looking in, but really you're inside looking out.
Yeah.
And if you just associate or identify yourself with the part of you that looks out when you're in.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that makes any sense at all. Did that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of perspective, and meditation for me is a lot about identifying with that part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, I am that light.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has such practical implications too. Like when we're not thinking that it's the outside thing that is going to bring us the what you get when you give a gift from the right,
right
place, happiness, joyfulness, right, whatever. Like giving a gift is a perfect metaphor or a perfect example of it.
It is, it really
is. It's the giving that's the joyful thing. Receiving is joyful too. But there's something very pure about giving, right? I saw this sign when we were in Helsinki at a beauty shop that it just totally gets this, right? Mm. Happy girls are the prettiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet we're always
looking for what's pretty.
The other way around. That when I get this, then I will be happy.
Yeah.
Right.
It's never true.
Yeah.
It's just never true. And I really, I think that, just in my own life, instead of looking for the result or the thing that I want to have happen, because I have those things, want this thing to have happen.
I just spent $2,000 on stereo equipment.
Yeah. But even, for me, it's always emotional stuff. Like in my life, I want this thing to happen in my family, or I want this thing to happen in my work, or I'm dissatisfied with this. Or I think I should be living somewhere else. Or, you know what I mean? There's just always this sort of constant, I'm a rearranger in my mind, I just constantly do that. And so instead of thinking about the thing itself, what I have ended up doing as a first step always when I hear that going on in my head is to just say, oh, what if everything were just exactly as it was supposed to be right now?
Yeah.
And I know that's just a kind of a trite thing, but it really takes out the struggle. So in other words, I always try and look for where am I struggling with what is.
Yeah.
And then just deal with that for its own merits. Like I'm struggling with, I shouldn't be living in this apartment that's so noisy outside and I can't sleep. Right. Well, but I am. So then if I just kind of deal with the struggle around that, the thing itself didn't change, but the struggle around it did.
Yeah.
And so that's an internal change that I can always make that I think for me relates a lot to the power of the giving is in the giving, not in the gift. The power of life is in life, not in the result of living.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to look like what you think it has to look like.
Right.
And that, I don't know, for me, that's really a constant practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think for most people it is. And mostly we just need to be reminded of that.
Yeah. I took that all the way to my meditation practice. When I lived in Virginia, when was that?
A long time ago.
I'd been practicing for more than 10 years. And I still had these wonders, is this ever going to feel like, some kind of blissed out, something mm-hmm. different, light show, whatever,
mm-hmm.
And I did just what you just said. I said, okay, I'm just going to start a little practice saying, wow, I am so glad. Well, I didn't even say that. I said, remember when it used to be a struggle to do meditation,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm figured it all out, and now my practice is just right. And boy, I was so distressed about that back then, and it's so great that I don't have to worry about that anymore. And then I would sit and do my thing. And
so it was an affirmation.
Yeah, it was like what you said, like changing the focus of what the worry is or the thing, like literally cutting that away for a moment, say, no, I'll deal with that in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Just going to see it differently now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in a have a different attitude that I choose right now. I'm going to like fake it.
Something about the way you phrase it is so intriguing to me. Like, remember that time? I don't know. It's like this interesting self-talk. But, you know, the other side of that is that when things do end up occurring on the outer side, right? Like when you've done that work and you're in the place where you've planted the seed or you've done your meditation or you've done your shifting of perspective and dealing with the struggle part. And then you are just having an intention about something. And then the outside starts to change.
Yeah.
You know, and like it's so affirm, that is really truly affirming.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when that can happen.
Right.
You know, like I'm thinking about that moment where we took that family picture where we had called the lift and we had almost gotten our coats on and the baby was wanting to go to sleep and saying night-night and everybody was like done and the dog was running around. And then I said, oh my God, we forgot to take the family picture. And somehow or other, like all the parts converged and, you know, the timer got set and we all went, hi.
Yeah.
And it felt like this moment where it was like an actual affirmation of an intention that we had all collectively set.
Yeah.
And it really was a powerful moment for me. And then we just went off to New York.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we were holding loosely to that thing at the same time we were wanting it to happen, which is a way that we can best line up.
Yeah.
With our karma in a big way. It's like, you know, a lot of times people will do practice, then have an occurrence like that. Like, oh my God, so-and-so called me. And isn't this a great thing? And I'm so good at manifesting now.
Yeah.
And again, it's like a different perspective, like with the meditation thing. It's like, it's not that now every thought you have of every desire you want is going to manifest because now you're such a good manifester. It's in that moment, you are aligning with what is coming to you, and it felt right. So sometimes that's going to happen that way, and other times it's not going to happen that way. But what you always can do is align with yourself in your silence, as Heather and I spoke about recently, and then be open to whatever comes and be present so that when it comes, you say, wow, that's exactly. That looks like
there's
a good thing for me to do.
Yeah, there
like
it is.
We just sat down and my favorite part of that whole picture thing was I had an iPhone as the camera.
Yeah.
And how do you take a picture of five people and a dog with an iPhone on a timer? I mean, you can't arm. You can't use your arm.
Yeah.
And what is there in front of me?
In 2 seconds before the baby goes to sleep.
And what is there in front of me but the little toy dump truck that Mateo has been playing with the whole time we've been there.
Yeah.
And my phone just sat right in that dump truck and took our picture.
Yep. I know. It was so awesome. And the other part that does not escape me is that, you know, if you spend time struggling with, like, the baby's tired and so, you know, Chris is distracted and, you know what I mean, whatever might be actually going on in the room, then you're just going to dissipate whatever little piece of resonant energy you have on the stuff that, you know, if you're struggling with that stuff, you're just in the struggle.
Yeah.
But if you just sort of notice it and be like, oh, that's happening, that's happening, that's happening, and it doesn't have to be... It, you know, it's like it's all the elements of the story are there.
Yeah.
But they are not written.
Yeah.
Right. And if you write it, you know, you if you write the story like in the old pattern, right, I don't ever get what I want or, you know, those old patterns, then the thing can't happen.
Yeah.
You know,
or it might and you don't even notice that it happened.
Exactly. And it's so funny if you, and I think what you're saying is if you're aligning with the intention, if you're aligning with your own beingness in the moment, then all the things have more room to come together in a collective intention.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've always been intrigued by the samurai stories and this, I guess it's a philosophy of like the thing that a samurai does is prepares and is always ready and tries to have no thought
in the moment.
In the moment. Doing. Of the doing.
Yeah.
And so it's so great because I got Chris a samurai DJ shirt and I got myself a samurai bass player shirt. Mm-hmm. And you can see it if you come to the kirtan on New Year's Day. But to me, that's like all of life is, you just described it. It's like if you're staying open and you have no doubts about yourself, then the thing comes and you simply slice it, you know, you simply do it. You take the action that's appropriate in the moment. And then you don't say, wow, wasn't that a great action?
Exactly.
You're just literally on to the next thing.
Forever doing great actions.
Right. Yeah. It's like those in the movies, sometimes you'll see some youngster with a veteran grizzly person and something takes place that's really good. And the young person will say, can we just enjoy the moment? And the guy, the grizzly woman or man will say, the moment's gone. That moment's gone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're moving
on. I loved the, so the other place that applies in Asian culture is with the, what do you call it when the calligraphy?
Yeah.
Right? And the master's always practicing. And then the client comes back and says, where's my
painting that you said would take a month.
Yeah, and then he paints it right in front of them and hands it to them, and like he's been practicing behind the screen for the whole month, and then he does it in the moment. Practice, you know, that old yoga thing. That's it's practice.
Yeah,
it's just about the practice. It's not about anything else. There's no actual other thing that it's about.
Right. So let's revisit for a second the things we started with, the light, ringing in. I thought about the ringing in this weekend about as the chakras, the bija mantras for the chakras, and that we ring bells also to realign ourselves, to retune ourselves.
Yeah.
And at this time of year, it is a time of hibernation and rebirth. And so that we come back and we're in tune for the new season.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's useful to take the time to do that for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
I was just reading this article in the New Yorker about sleep. And it was a little meandering, but the part that was intriguing to me, because I've been talking with some people who have been having some insomnia issues, you know, is that there's this cultural drive to just work and not rest. And that so much good stuff takes place in that rest moment, in that restoring moment. And of course, in yoga, we also get at it through yoga nidra, yoga sleep.
It just makes so much, I can't even imagine from where I am now. Like I have been in part times of my life where I am just on overdrive, you know, and just working. And usually that reflects to me of just ill health. You know, I just don't maintain it well. But when I think about it right now, sitting right where I am, even just you saying that, makes me feel like I should take a nap. I'm in utter disbelief about how little actual regard that we give that part of our life, which is 50%.
Yeah.
You know, sleeping and dreaming have been so belittled.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a really important, and I think I say this partially as a mystic that gets half of my information when I'm sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
but also just physiologically and psychologically and relationally. You know, how can we be in our, attuned to our own, you know, I don't know what you would want to call it in so many different traditions, but our like our electromagnetic reality, our actuality,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, mm-hmm. like when there's the metaphor of something and the reality of something, like we have these energetic realities of who we are, and we can't be operating, you know, in a pulsatory way if we're not, if we're denying half of the pulsation.
Yeah.
It's kind of like denying
the dark.
You're saying
half, but like if you sleep 8 hours out of 24, that's like a quarter.
Yeah, but rest itself is mm-hmm. really fully half mm-hmm. of what we do, right? I mean, there's sleeping.
Yeah, rajas and tamas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And resting, mm-hmm. Not doing.
Yeah.
Being in the...
Sattva.
Being in the rest part. You know, there's a doing, and then there's the not doing part of the doing. There's the ringing, and then there's the sound that comes from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be at rest in order to fully process that that vibrational energetic movement, you know, but we're always ringing.
Yeah.
We want to ring it. So I don't know. I think to me, it's just a big reality. And I, you know, I do better when I have so much more vitality and energy for the moment of action.
Yeah.
When I really pay attention to the non-action, even though it feels maybe like there might be thoughts in my head at that time of like, what should I be doing? I should be doing something. You know, there's that those struggle thoughts that come in.
Yeah.
And I've learned to say, you know what? Well, then, you know, do some writing or do whatever you need to do, but let it be.
Yeah. I think that's so right on. And a lot of times we are using our rest time or our quiet time, our being time for other activities that aren't necessarily moving around, but they're still mentally active.
Yeah.
You know, we're watching TV or we're listening to something on a podcast or we're reading or we're doing something else, like it's an activity even though it's resting.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to a movie, right? Now all those things are great. There's nothing wrong with any of those things, but we need to count them as part of our activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I sat on the subway yesterday. It was kind of a busy 2 weeks, right? Even though mm-hmm. we took a few days and went away. And when I was coming home yesterday from teaching, I realized my go-to lately is put on a podcast. And I really enjoy that. And it's been really informative and helped me broaden connections and contacts and lots of good things, like any good information. But I took a moment and just didn't do that. I just like looked across the way and looked at the person's shoes and stared out the window and watched the Statue of Liberty go by when we crossed into Brooklyn and stuff like that. And it was interesting to just be observant.
It's yeah.
Kind of a mindfulness practice.
You had a mini podcast cleanse.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard for us to do that anymore. I do think that we need to add that as part of our practice, just generally, you know, like I think it would be more useful for us to just take moments in the day, throughout the day, to not be in that cycle, swirl, mental,
yeah,
of, you know, information so that we can sort of down-regulate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than like I can let myself be completely 100% in it and plugged in all the time and then take like 10 days and go on retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's, you know, then it's just less effective for me. Not mm-hmm. I love going on retreat,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you can do mini retreats throughout the day.
Yeah.
You know, where like if you are writing emails, and I think this is that downtime thing too, you know, it doesn't seem all that potent, but like if you're working and then you just stop and pause and let it be.
Yeah.
And then you look at it before you send it or before you do whatever you're doing with it. It just creates this spaciousness around what you're doing. And you had a time to sort of digest. And I think that's probably what this time is for.
Right. In our seasons.
In our seasons, to digest the experience of the year and to reset, to welcome the new, you know, and different cultures do this differently. There's no question. But, you know, in our consumer culture, I think that we need to figure out a way to be with the this part of the season that is really more productive for us. You know, it's not, we think of it as unproductive, but it's not, it's very productive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I often have like the opposite viewpoint, but I think this is the most productive time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows itself in the, you know, in the doing of the spring and the warmer times of the year.
Right. I like that story that you have of when you were traveling as a teenager or a college student and you had a potential roommate and you had this important question that you asked her.
No, she asked me. I had done a summer program in Florence and I had a roommate from my college, but I didn't know her from college. And we met there. I mean, I knew who she was, but I didn't know her at all. And we spent the whole summer and we got along fine. We were in the same room in this woman's house. And we both had time on the end of this program where we had both planned individually to travel. It was like pretty long time, like a month. And I was an art history student and I was going to go see the different things, you know, had an agenda. She had an agenda. Her family was Italian and she had some things she was going to do. And we talked about, should we travel together or should we just travel independently like we had planned? And she said, well, I'd love to travel with you, but I just have one important question. And I said, okay, shoot. And she said, do you consider that you're wasting time when you sleep? And I said, no. And she goes, okay, let's go. And we had a great time. It was very relaxed. We just slept when we wanted to. If she was asleep, I would go do my thing. If I was asleep, she would go do her thing. We did like all the like Pope stuff for her family, and we hit all the art historical sites for me, and we were happy as clams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you processed during your sleep time.
And we slept like a ton.
Mm-hmm.
We just, you know, we always made sure to have a comfortable place where we were staying so that we could sleep and not get distressed about it. And we drank our coffee and in the morning, like true Italians. Yeah,
yeah.
And had our little cornetto at the bar.
Yeah.
So I've always really appreciated the downtime.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've gone up and down on that, but.
Yeah, you're more Vata.
Yeah. But I don't have trouble sleeping. So that's been a kind of a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And meditating too. It's like despite the 1995 to 1985 to 95 challenges, it was still, it's been relatively constant place that I go for inspiration and just a sense of sanity.
Yeah.
And more and more, I was saying in our meditation training that we just concluded at Ishta, you know, more and more I try to make moments. Like you were talking about having the 10-day retreat versus having the little downtime. I'm also trying to make time like constantly to keep remembering, you know what? There's that meditation place. Close my eyes, go there, have a breath there.
Yes.
Come back into whatever I'm doing, whether it's on the subway or in a class or, you know, in a store or having coffee or something.
Yeah.
Keep remembering, this is only one part of who I am. There's that other part.
Yes.
Let's go be there for a second.
Yes.
And come back.
Yeah. And just to turn it around, the other way to look at the 10-day retreat or the longer retreat where you take yourself out of your situation is to really establish the ability to do that, right? You take that time and you leave behind what you're obsessed with or involved yes. in, yeah. and you come out and you just work on your practice of getting there.
Yes.
So that when you're in your life, you can draw on that. Yes. And that has a lot to do with community and the support that you get from your peers and your teachers in that environment.
Yeah.
So that you can, you know, it's sort of like a little bolster
bolster.
A bump of energy mm-hmm. that you can draw on. You know, you're filling your piggy bank that you take home with
right,
you.
Right, right.
And I think that's really, really valid. And it has been really important in my life. I'm not discounting it, but I like that, you know, that reminder to do it every day. You know, that reminder that it's part of your life. It's right. like, you know.
Right. Yeah, and speaking of reminder, this will be our first reminder that we're going to do a retreat in the summer, so you can save the date of the whole summer.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly when it's going to be yet, but we're going to go off.
End of July, beginning of August.
Yeah, we're going to go off and do a retreat somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we'll have many more details about that as we go
forward.
Yeah, and
it will most likely be an evolution of our creativity, yoga and creativity retreat from last year.
Yeah.
An evolution of that.
Yeah. But I wanted to, you know, sort of be in a festivity and not so much in a business place in this podcast. Hopefully you'll get a chance to listen to it during the week between Christmas and New Year's. Yeah. And, that's very much the mood that we're in right here, having opened our season with the solstice in Chicago, Chi-town. Mm-hmm. And now we're back in Brooklyn, and we're going to take a little jaunt up to Saratoga.
And we have our lights strung across our doorways and
our spray of
greenery.
We don't have a Christmas tree here, but we have like all the parts short
we have,
of a Christmas tree.
Yes, the whole apartment is an exploded Christmas tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pine cones and little deer candles and
The
music.
Candles are lit, the bulbs are in their festive colors, and we have some eggnog in the fridge.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that eggnog, actually.
I was too. I was thinking about breaking that
Christmas?
Out early. We are so psychic with each other. So we hope that you have a wonderful holiday, however you celebrate the holidays. And it's been a joy to bring thoughts to you over the course of this year.
Yeah.
And now that we're in the dark time of the year, may your dreams be filled with inspiration and joy, and may you find a meditative state that feels like I used to struggle with that, but isn't it great now? I just meditate and it's fruitful in all the right ways.
Mm. May you ring in that new year and remember to experience the vibration of the ringing throughout your year.
Yeah, and I would highly recommend that you listen to John Zorn's Christmas album.
Mm-hmm.
His wonderful, wonderful version of Christmas Time is Here, the Peanuts song.
Yeah.
It's quite gorgeous and has beautiful ringing in the front from the vibraphone.
Yeah. All right. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you for listening to Peter's podcast. We'll be back soon. Have a wonderful holiday. Namaste.